question, and my wavered reply. You said I'm not the kind you have to wind up on Sunday. So told my old headmaster, and to anyone who cares, before I'm broke, I'd like to say my prayer.
Hello, welcome to Yada Yada Radio, the Shabbat Torah study. For those who have been part of the chat room for a while know that Blog Talk Radio and their infinite wisdom decided that regularly scheduled shows were no longer acceptable. They have discontinued all of them. Those of you who have used your normal bookmarks to get here won't find the show. When I logged on today just to verify that the show was scheduled, it had been eliminated. James has volunteered to try to keep on top of it and to post individual shows so we're not caught off guard as we nearly were today. But Blog Talk Radio is not playing nice anymore, so it's going to be more difficult to use this forum. Hello, James, and I guess we also have the Larianator with us.
Yes, the Larianator's here. And thankfully, Cherie did find it. Posted it,
yes.
By the way.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when I tried to bring it up, and I usually come to the show about an hour and a half early just to make sure that the show is scheduled and that there aren't glitches, because one of the most disconcerting things in any show, and by the way, it happens on the GCN show about once every other week, where there's a connection glitch, and you're panicked right before you're going to begin because you can't make it work. And it was one day this week where there were double problems in connecting to GCN. So I come early, and I spent 45 minutes trying to figure out what happened to the show. And trying to find a tool that I had used over the past 7 years to schedule shows on GPR.
Yeah.
And you know, James, you've been there. You've used that tool with me to schedule shows on GPR. I've been there for 7 years, and they just decided to eliminate it. So there are no regularly scheduled shows any longer on Blog Talk Radio. So it will be a little more difficult for us to make all of this work going forward. But at least we still have our head on our shoulders. We had a Muslim today in Oklahoma, as you mentioned, Larry, in the show, that went Muslim on us. And because they were disgruntled that they were unable, with the eloquence and beauty of Islam, to convert fellow Muslims, they cut off a co-worker's head and started to attack others with a knife. And so I asked...
Yeah, she was a cop.
I ask you, what is more merciful? Making Islam illegal and quarantining Muslims, or allowing Muslims to preach their hateful and deadly dogma and cut off people's heads?
Well, quarantine would be nice, you know.
I agree.
I think that would be, you know, it's like, what's worse, you know, telling somebody sharing Yahweh's words or letting these people run around in horror with their biblios? You know, I think all the biblios should be burned as well. So, I mean, it's all death.
Yeah.
All
the same thing. Ebola's pretty deadly. You know, 70% of the people that contract Ebola are going to bleed out. But 100% of those who have their heads cut off by a Muslim are going to die.
They'll bleed out. You betcha.
So, bad day here in America. Of course, the Obaminator will do everything that he can to disassociate Islam from the act. That is what he does. I can imagine the African-American community and National Organization for Women will stand up They will begin to hold protests and massive marches in Oklahoma. We'll have the Reverend Sharpton there protesting the murder, the beheading of an unarmed woman. It's only right.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be right down there on that. Yeah. They'll do everything they can to bury the story and disassociate it from the Islamic fundamentalist who did it.
It's just one crazy guy. It has nothing to do with Islam. Who cares if he were shouting
out? Or a book that tells you to do it. I've got a book that tells you to go do that, and you do it.
You're just a racist, Larry.
Yeah, the Quran. Yeah, here's the Quran telling Muslims to smite non-Muslims on the neck, which means to slice off their heads, and to continue to do so till everyone submits to Islam. It is a horrible religion, and there are no good religions, but it is the most satanic, the most brutal, the most deadly. In terms of its fatality rate, I don't think it's the most deadly in terms of total fatalities. I think that would still be
Christianity.
But it depends on what you're talking about here. And if you're talking about religious zealots killing other people, then Islam is deadlier both in percentage and in overall numbers. But if you're talking about number of souls that cease to exist because of a religious delusion, then, of course, Christianity would be more deadly because it has influenced more people. Yeah. It has.
A long shot.
By a long shot, yeah. There's been, probably 2.5 billion Muslims throughout history, and there have probably been 4 billion Christians, maybe 5 billion Christians throughout history. So it's the numbers between the two religions that have either lost their souls or their lives or both, that's really high. It's a crying shame that so many people have been deceived. And I think, Larry, you mentioned it today, that to be deceived by Pauline Christianity, you really have to be an idiot. It's hard to have sympathy for someone deceived by Pauline Christianity. The religion is so obviously false. Paul's testimony is so overwhelmingly in conflict with Yahweh's Torah that there is a 0% chance that he spoke for God. So his claims are untrue. They're unfounded. But Islam is a special kind of stupid. You know, to believe that God wants you to hunt down and kill everyone who doesn't surrender to him, and that the reward for being a mass murderer is multiple virgins in paradise and rivers that flow with wine. To believe that God is merciful, who spends all of his time in hell tormenting peaceful Muslims and non-Muslims, you just have to be an idiot. The Quran is the dumbest book ever written. Muhammad was the most pathetic man who ever lived.
He was a slave trading pedophile.
Yeah, slave trading, kidnapping, mass murdering, terrorizing pedophile and rapist.
Yeah, it takes a special person to get their spiritual inspiration from a guy in his 50s that's screwing a 9-year-old girl. Really? I mean, it takes somebody with a really warped view of the way things ought to be.
A guy that routinely would terrorize defenseless civilian communities with armed gangs, steal everything that they owned, kill the men, rape the women, and sell the children into slavery. And you're going to get your spiritual guidance from him. I mean, as the video movie, I think it's Tropic Thunder, that you sent me earlier today, you have to be full retard to be a Muslim.
Moronic. Imbecile.
And then when you think that the President of the United States is advocating on behalf of this religion, calling it great and disassociating the terror this religion has inspired, its mass murder, from the religion itself, you know that we're living in very dark and demented times.
Well, sure we are, and I think what the world's going to go into is the next dark age very shortly.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be perpetrated with Islam and the RCC and the Eastern Orthodox Church, and I think people are going to get to embrace that religion that they love. They're going to get to do it.
Yeah.
Not us.
It's easy to see that the president's speech on collectivism, on a unified global world, on a new covenant of man, a covenant of national institutions all integrated, that is exactly where the world's headed, and it is going to be the most hellish conditions that man has ever experienced.
Sure.
Men have tried to unify the world.
He's a moron. He's a moron, and he's not a man of any substance, and he didn't put this together. He's a spokesman for him.
Yeah.
So if he's up there saying it, that's the plan. And, you know, he went out there and marched out there like the little puppet boy that he is and spoke it. End of story. Yeah, that's the plan.
Credentials for being president. He would recognize that he had none. And so if there ever was a stupid little puppet boy being played, but he's being willfully, knowingly played. He's going right along with it. He actually views himself as the great savior of the world. You know, America now has the most disreputable leader in the world. I mean, I would rather have Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Ibrahim, than I would Obama. Because at least with Ibrahim, even though he's going to promote a disgusting religion, he's going to tell you the truth. He's going to tell you exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it. Obama is going to advance that same religion, advocate that same religion, but every word out of his mouth is a lie. Who's worse?
Well, you know, no, I agree. I mean, you know, but it's nice to pretend that there's a, you know, a Disneyland, I think, and that's the very object of these political actors and get up and do these speeches. And by the way, as lame as their words are, I can't even believe anybody buys it. How could anybody believe a guy who's never even had an important position in his life could put together an international world?
Right. A guy that's never even flipped hamburgers and said, would you like fries with that, ma'am? He never worked a day in his life for any business.
Community organizer.
And he is, he's orchestrating the world's economy. Yeah, he's never held an executive position with any organization, and yet he's the leader of the free world. He's never fought in a battle, and yet he's commander-in-chief. Yeah.
It's laughable.
Is it a wild world that we live in?
It's surreal. It's surreal. It's like bombing ISIS while you fund the Syrian rebels / ISIS.
I mean, did you hear today that Al Nusra and the Islamic State merged?
Oh, wow. Oh, let me fall out of my chair over here.
They merged today.
I don't believe it.
Yeah. The only foe that the Islamic State had that was quasi-credible merged with them today because of the U.S. bombing.
Yeah, well, they got a new organization out there, too, I'd like to introduce you guys to. It's called Rivers Against Water. Maybe you've heard of it.
Rivers Against Water. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad news out there.
I want to make one more statement, then we're going to return to the 119th Psalm, because we're in the Ain section of the 119th Psalm. And Ain is one of my favorite letters in the of the 22 in Hebrew. Not that it being my favorite matters, but it is, I think when you understand the idea behind the letter, I think it would be a lot of people's favorite letter. But the last thing I want to say is that while Barack Hussein Obama in his speech to the United Nations was one of the most despicable, most evil diatribes ever witnessed broadcast before humanity. And while it reveals the very heart of the beast, the very nature of evil, and explains precisely where the world is headed, which is to a horrible place of tyranny and war. The thing that bothers me the most about it is not that he said it. It's not even that he's president of the United States and said it. It's not even that he said it in the United Nations. What do you think bothers me the most, really chokes me up, and just eats me up inside about that speech?
Everything.
Everything. It's the lack of reaction. Nobody in the media has held them accountable and said, everything you've said is untrue. Your depiction of World War One was false. World War Two was false. Your depiction of Islam is false. Your depiction of Russia is false. Your depiction of the United States is false. Everything that you stated here is false. And so you have advocated a controlled economy, a controlled world, an integrated world on a command and control regimen. That's what you're advocating. You're advocating a world without borders, total globalization. You're telling us that no contract, no agreement, no rules that were conceived in the past century apply, and that a whole new paradigm must come to exist. And not one person with any credibility stood up and said, you're full of it. Not one person. As a matter of fact,
well, you know,
60 Minutes is going to allow him a forum to explain how he's leading America through these troubled times.
You know, the United Nations could best be described, in my opinion, as an assembly of criminals gathered from various parts of the planet. What do you think?
Well, you know, Larry, if you were to go back to my political days where I was a conservative Republican, as you once were, I viewed the UN as a horrible institution that America should disassociate from. And today, I view America as being worse than the United Nations.
It controls it.
So you know, I don't see the United Nations any worse than the world of Islam, any worse than the United States government, any worse than the European Union. I just see it as a consistent reflection of human institutions.
Sure. Yeah, a bunch of criminals in important positions with titles. Sure.
So my perspective, since we're talking about AIM here, my perspective has changed. So that rather than seeing the UN is bad, communism is bad, and America is good.
Well, you're just not seeing America as good. You're seeing it for what it is.
No, I'm just seeing them as all the same. There is no purpose for America getting out of the UN anymore. No purpose. No better in it or out of it. The UN is no more negative in its influence in the world than is so many other things I once held dear.
I would just go to the point to say that
the first requirement of participating in the covenant is to walk away from your country, to walk away from your human family, to walk away from human customs, to walk away specifically from Babylon, which Yahweh describes as a very caustic, hypocritical, evil, conniving mix of Satan, of religion, of politics, of militarism, and jaundiced economic schemes. That's how Yahweh describes Babylon, and he asks us to walk away from it. It's a requirement for participation in the covenant, and it's good advice.
It's why we observe his Torah.
Exactly.
And right there, that's where he started. And Yahweh said, and this is right in Bereshith, Genesis 12:1, Yahweh said to Abram, it is my request and desire that you of your own volition, right away, that does away with any religious, trying to get people in the doors, you will literally walk away and genuinely come out of your country away from your relatives, away from your father's house, to God, to God's realm, which as a result of the relationship, I will show and provide. So of your
and,
own religion,
by the way, before we talk about the show and provide, what country did Yahweh say that Abraham was in just two or three verses previous to that?
Well, he was in Ur. He was in Babylon. He was in the most
religious place. Ur of the Chaldeans, right? And Chaldeans,
yeah, right,
throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is synonymous with Babylon.
That's
Ur
right.
Happened to be the city that was part of Babylonia that was on, in fact, it still exists as a city. It's just not on the bay anymore, but it's the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates River, where it discharges all of that human rubbish that's throughout Mesopotamia, all through Babylonia and Assyria, discharges at Ur. He was in Ur of the Chaldeans. He was in Babylon. And he says, I want you to leave your country. Your country, I want you to leave Babylon. And he says more about Babylon than any country other than Israel. The only country he speaks more about than Israel is Babylon. Egypt would be a close third in that regard. And everything he says about Babylon, without exception, is negative. And Yahshayah, he associates Babylon with Halal ben Shakar, Satan. And in Yirmiyah, almost the entire book is devoted to besmirching the religious and political nature of Babylon. And that's what he asked us to walk away from. Now,
well, yeah,
the reason
and he also describes that basically a lot of Israel, so that was, went out and became what clearly is described in Yirmiyah as Christianity. Christmas trees, calling him Lord.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what other group of people it could be.
And what did you celebrate that most, you know, religious Jews, what did they celebrate yesterday?
The Babylonian head of the year in the
Rosh Hashanah
month called Rosh Hashanah.
Right, Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
And what do Jews do for 40 days and 40 nights as it relates to crying for Tammuz? Is that perhaps just a tinge Babylonian?
Just a little bit. He was the son. Tammuz was the son of the sun, wasn't he?
Yeah, in the Babylonian religion.
Yeah.
He was allegedly killed by a wild boar on a 40-day hunting trip. And so for 40 days and 40 nights, Lent, and weeping for Tammuz, depending if you're talking about Christianity or Judaism, is crying over the son of the sun, the counterfeit for Yahusha. Not exactly
well, sure
harmless.
It is.
Yeah.
Sure it is.
Now, the reason we've been talking about all of this, right, the reason we've been talking about all this is that it's because it's important. Unless you're willing to disassociate from politics, governance, patriotism, religion, militarism, your country, unless you're willing to disassociate from those things, you're not welcome in Yahweh's family.
The Babylonians, the Jews that lived there, there was a day, it was called the Day of Judgment, and that's where Rosh Hashanah comes from. And they believed on that day a convocation of their deities assembled in the temple of Marduk, no less. And these guys held, basically they renewed the world, judging each human and inscribing their fate on tablets.
By the way, we ought not give Christians a break here. Just because the Jews have accepted the Babylonian religious holiday of the head of the year, which is exactly as you've described it, a pagan celebration of renewal.
Sure it is.
Roman Catholics, therefore Christianity, did it accept a pagan holiday for its new year?
Well, yeah. January. The god with two heads that looked forward and backward at the same time.
Yeah, they accepted the Roman religious calendar. And accepted Janus, the doorkeeper, the god of beginnings, Janus is the Roman god of new beginnings, and Christianity, being Roman Catholic, accepted the Roman Catholic religious calendar. So they're no better than the religious Jews.
Yeah, and they covered over Passover with Ishtar, the Ishtar celebration, and 9 months after the sun impregnated the earth, that became Christmas, Jesus' birthday.
Correct. Yeah. Now, if we were to go to Muslims, they started their year with Ramadan. And Ramadan is a celebration of Muhammad meeting with the dark spirit that nearly beat him to death, that possessed him by his own admission, by Satan. And the only reason it doesn't fall on a specific time each year is that Muhammad was so stupid, he removed the intercalary month from the year so that his year is 12 lunar months, have 29.5 days, and therefore each year is 5 days. It's 5 days short of a lunar year, and it just floats all
maybe
around the
summer,
year.
Maybe summer, a few years later, it's winter.
Yeah, absolutely stupid, but that's Muhammad for you. All right, Yahweh has an entirely different plan. And it's so different that he not only asks us if we're interested in forming a relationship with him as a prerequisite, even before we can get beyond how do you do. Now, God will show an interest in us. He will reach out to us. He'll invite us into the relationship before we do anything. You know, if you look at Abraham, Abraham did not engage in the covenant. He did not know who Yahweh was. He did not know the terms and conditions of the covenant when he and Yahweh first interacted. I can tell you for certain that the first time Yahweh and I interacted, that I did not know these things. I can tell you the first time that Moshe and Yahweh interacted, Moshe did not know these things. They all came to know them. They all embraced them. They all accepted and acted upon the terms and conditions of the covenant. But Yahweh can and does reach out to people before they're in that place. And he did with Abraham. But, you know, he told Abraham, I'm going to show you and provide for you. And Yahweh did show him. Remember when Abraham was saying, I don't get it. I don't have a kid. You keep on talking about inheritance and, you know, you better explain this to me because I'm not following the program here. And what did Yahweh do? He took him to the realm of the stars, to light. And he explained, light, this is what I'm offering you. You're going to become like these stars. Eternal. Brilliant. Vastly more powerful. You're going to become like that. He showed him heaven. And then he has provided all of that on our behalf. And he provided it through the benefits of the covenant.
Now, of course, the religious copy edit says they're going to be more. You're going to be more than the stars in the heavens. So Yahweh lies to him. But what Yahweh was really saying is they're going to become like light. I mean, that's good to know because the copy edits in the book named after Biblio are so awful. I mean, they're just awful.
They are. It takes work, an investment of time, the most worthy investment of time that anyone can undertake to come to know what God actually said. There's nothing easy about it, and that is by design. God does not want it easy. He does not want a four spiritual laws. You do the checklist, and you're all copacetic, because if that were the case, heaven would be littered with people who are miserable to be around, who are always looking for the easy way out, who don't know Yahweh, don't much like who he is, that want to be religious, want to be political, want to be patriotic, and frankly, I've had my fill of them. I know God's had his fill of them.
Yeah, I don't want to
the
live
last
in submission.
Thing, oh, man, can you imagine?
We've only
like
had him for so many years. God's been dealing with these idiots for centuries.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine having a guy like Paul in heaven and having to listen to his muck? Can you imagine having, I don't know how many of you know Rich Warren, the guy that created Chrislam, that's got the mega
Yeah, yeah, I know who he is. Yeah,
yeah.
Kind of an overweight, sort of dolt, sort of
yeah.
Santa Claus.
Can you imagine, or Jimmy Swaggart, or James Baker, can you imagine having to endure those kind of creeps in heaven?
No.
No.
I can't.
I mean, how would you like to have to spend heaven with a religious zealot of Ibrahim al-Baghdadi? Or how would you like, I mean, this current pope, who I swear is at least 50 cards shy of a full deck. How'd you like to spend time with him, with his fancy ruby slippers and white robes?
I've got a video of this guy praising Lucifer, saying, "Christos has risen, Lucifer." You know, he uses the word Illuminati. I mean, and they're right out front about it now. They're right out front. I mean, I'm amazed anybody follows them.
Yeah, anything but Yahweh. Anything is fine,
well,
so long as it's not Yahweh.
Fine, but you can't say Yahweh. They outlawed his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
We have not outlawed his name on this program. All right, we're turning to the verses of the 119th song that devotes 8 statements to each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet in the order of those words. And we returned to the 119th Psalm because someone wrote you, Larry and Ater, and said that there were many uses of asah, which is the Hebrew word for do, to engage or to act, to endeavor, to respond, or to work, in the 119th Psalm. And therefore, this idea that the doing that we should do, which I have said based upon studying the 119th Psalm, is to observe Yahweh's Torah, which means to closely examine and carefully consider what he had to say, to read it, and to think about it, and to focus on 4 things in particular. He has the prescriptions for living that enable us to respond to him. He has the means to exercise good judgment and resolve disputes. He has the terms and conditions of the covenant itself. And the 4th is those things which are inscribed, literally cut into stone, that cut us into the relationship. And so rather than paying attention to them and then responding to Yahweh, engaging and acting upon his Torah guidance, someone wanted to convey the idea that, no, we are to do what God says, which is kissing cousin to the Torah is full of rules to obey. And
right. What
we found is the opposite of that. But I will tell you that the first word of the Ain section is the Hebrew word asah, which can be translated do, act, engage, respond, endeavor. All right? So we are front and center with the reason we return to the 119th Psalm. Now, before we go further, I want to have my standard admission of fallibility, if we may. I happen personally to view Dode, the author of this psalm, as the most brilliant mind in human history. The man's ability to think and to communicate resonates with me. I find him to be a fascinating read. And since Yahweh has disclosed that this man, whose behavior was in wholesale violation of the Torah, but whose understanding was sublime as it relates to the Torah, is the man that he loves most in the world. It, therefore, seemed reasonable to me to conclude that it was his understanding of the Torah is which caused God to love him, not his doing of what the Torah said. Now, I don't think I'm on much of a limb there. But that takes me to the point of saying that since the person God loves most of all human beings violated the Torah every which way in terms of his behavior and celebrated the Torah in every magnificent way in terms of his songs, I have concluded that the purpose of the Torah is for us to understand who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and empower us to be able to respond intelligently to the invitations and to the covenant. So,
can I add something here, just briefly?
Pardon? Yeah.
Can I add something briefly here?
Okay.
Just as Yahweh earnestly requested, that didn't command anything, requested,
mm-hmm.
that Abraham walk out of Babylon. He's asking you and I to do that.
Correct.
But I don't live in Babylon, so literally
right.
I can't do it. But guess what? I can understand that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where we're at here, right?
Yeah. It's just like there were three animals listed in the land animal section of the dietary instructions that don't exist and never have existed. And while they do have some very distant reference to animals that were prominent in a religious context, in a political context, the animals themselves actually never existed. And so you can't do that. You can't obey that. But if you look at each of the words and see what is repeated in terms of the way that the animals that are chosen to be consumed not only thoroughly digest their food, they are cud chewers, which means they regurgitate it and then digest it, chew on it some more to fully digest it. When you see that their hooves are divided, which means they're separated, and therefore they understand the concept of set apart and to be separated from man, particularly in their walk. When you see those things repeated, you know, I can learn from all of it. And so that, to me, is the goal of the Torah, that the Torah exists as guidance, as directions, as instructions, and teaching for us to learn from so that we can respond to what Yahweh was offering. Now, I'm fully willing to admit that I could be wrong. I think the logic is flawless here. The logic that I've just presented, the case for it, but I'm a flawed individual. And if you have a different view, that you're entitled to it. But I'm at least going to have the mea culpa here that I view the Torah in the same way that Dode views the Torah. And since Dode was inspired by Yahweh, we know that for certain because of the precise prophecies that Dode communicated. I'm going to project back on Yahweh everything that Dode wrote. And therefore, it's not just Dode's impression that the Torah is to understand, not to obey. It's Yahweh's view that the Torah is to understand. It was not written to control our lives, but was written to liberate us. So, all that said, here is the first verse under Ain. And, J.B., you've studied the Hebrew alphabet. How was the Ain drawn?
Seems like an eye.
Oh, yeah, all right, an eye. And therefore, the Ain communicates several things. The first of those is perspective. We gain perspective via our eyes. And perspective is everything. If you want to understand something, you've got to have the right perspective. As soon as you adjust your perspective to Yahweh, you're in a position where you can translate his word effectively, you can understand what he has to say, you can participate in a relationship with him. Perspective, you can even understand where the world is going amok when you gain a new perspective. Perspective is really essential to understand. Second, it communicates observation. We use our eyes to observe, which means we use our eyes to read the lyrics that Dode wrote. The third connotation of the eye happens to be an extrapolation. But if you look up Ain in Hebrew, what you will see is that you will see to see as first, perceptions or perspective as second, And then you'll see under AIM, the third definition is to understand, to gain insight so that you understand. Because observation is the prerequisite for understanding. And the eyes are a window into your mind. And so it's presented as understanding. All right. All that being the case, I want to share one other insight on AIM. And there, I'm sure there are more. So this is not, I'm not attempting to be comprehensive. I just want to help establish the right perspective for what we're going to consider. The last letter in Yosha's name is an AIM. The Yosha is the visible manifestation of Yahweh Spirit. And so he is the Word which we can observe with our eyes made flesh. He is the visible representation of the Word of Yahweh. And that is why there is an AIM concluding his name. So besides that, the AIM is a, you know, fairly modest letter. First word, Asha, here. I have genuinely acted and engaged on behalf of. Asha, I have actively responded to, endeavored to work with, assumed the responsibilities of, celebrated, and profited from in the call perfect, which speaks of, I only had to do this once. Really? I mean, this is something that once you act upon what God has prescribed, it's done. You're not constantly having to do it to earn your way into heaven. You know, you accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, you receive the benefits of the covenant. You don't have to reaccept the terms and conditions of the covenant every new day. Perfect. That means perfect is a completed act in time. And it's all that is necessary. The call means, I'm laying this out for you literally. Don't try to put a symbolic spin on this. This is what I have actually and genuinely done. Okay? So that's the stem, and that's the twist on the verb, the perspective on the verb in terms of ongoing action or completed action in time. So I have genuinely acted upon and engaged on behalf of the misfot. The misfot are the terms, the mishpat, which are the means to achieve good judgment and to resolve disputes.
Resolve all disputes. That would be the Moed Mikra, like Tarua, as an example.
And to exercise, the means to exercise good judgment is to gain the perspective of the Torah. That's the means to exercise good judgment, to use your Nathalma to study the Torah. That's what gives you your perspective. If you're grounded looking at Yahweh, his invitations, his covenant, and humankind from the foundation, from the bedrock of the Torah, you've got the right perspective. So I have genuinely acted upon and engaged on behalf of the means to achieve justice, resolve disputes, and to think rationally, to exercise good judgment. And you are right. The misfot are the invitations to be called out in Mikrasat, specifically. Although I would tell you, Eric,
that he blazed.
I would tell you that there is a, it's not separate, but I don't think there is a difference between the mitzvah and the misfot. And let me try to flesh out that comparison. The misfot are the means that Yahweh uses to resolve disputes. And so you'd look at that, okay, that's Passover, that's matzah in the path to him. So Passover and matzah, even reconciliations would all be means to resolve disputes. The other mikre are celebratory and benefits of the covenant. But so that's the way that Yahweh resolves disputes. That's why the second condition of the covenant is walk to me and become perfect. Walk via Passover and matzah, leading to Yom Kippurim, reconciliation before we camp out together. So we recognize that most adroitly, the Misfit are the Moed Mikre. That's what you said. You're right. But there is a another means to the exact same result, and that's the terms and conditions of the covenant, the Misfit. If you accept and act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, you benefit from the Misfit. Because the terms and conditions of the covenant walk away from human institutions, and instead of trusting governments and religion, trust Yahweh. Walk to him and become perfect. And so I do not look at the mitzvah and the misfat as being separate. Now I'll go one step further. There are four things that Dod asked us to pay attention to that he celebrated having a focus on. I think they're all the same thing. Because you had to include these two things, the choke, those inscribed instructions that cut us into the relationship. Well, how's that any different?
The mitzvah.
Yeah, then the mitzvah.
They're not.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the next is the Purim, which are those insights that enable us to respond appropriately. That's the same thing.
Those might be slightly different because they are insights, and it does take insight. You know, people that just think they're going to stupidly go down the road and just, well, you know, God knows me. I know God. You know, I mean,
I'm going to disagree with you, Larry.
Okay.
And I know that's scary to disagree with the Larianator, but I'm going to disagree here.
I'm sure you're all shook up over there.
Yeah, I am. It takes insight and understanding to respond to the conditions for covenant participation.
Yes.
You have to understand what it means to walk away from Babylon, from your country and from your father's house and from your culture. You have to think that through and make the connections. What does God say about Babylon? What was Babylon like? And what does he mean to walk away from it? Because, you know, I still sit here in the United States. I haven't walked out into the Pacific Ocean to see how long I can tread water. So you've got to think that through, right?
Daniel was a viceroy there.
When Yahweh says, I want you to trust and rely on me, now you have to think, all right, what is the requirement of trust? Well, you can't trust someone you don't know. You can't rely on something you don't understand. So where would we come to know and understand so that we can trust and rely? Well, you have to read the Torah. So that requires some insight. Walk to me and become perfect. Well, that requires a lot of insight. Where is the walk that Yahweh has prescribed that enables him to make us perfect? Well, Pesach, Matzah, Bekudim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. So even that requires some insight. So I view that everything that he has said for us to Pekudim, be smart enough to respond appropriately, for us to mitzvah, for us to act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, for us to choke, grasp hold of those instructions that he etched in stone so that we could be cut into the relationship and misfot, walk to him and become perfect through this process. I think they're all related. And I'll go on.
Well, they're not separate issues. That's for sure. You know, you're right. I mean, they are one and the same. All of it.
One of the
same. It's all tied
together.
Now
we'll go one step further.
Yeah.
They're all Torah.
They're not only all found
in the Torah. They are the essence of
Torah. All Torah.
They're the essence of Yahweh's guidance and teaching and instruction. You could say all of it. He could have just begun, as he said, Shamar Torah. And then Asha Torah. Observe the Torah. Act upon the Torah. Right?
Yeah, but he wanted to be specific, and he was specific.
Right.
So.
He wanted to go beyond that. He's going to write a stanza for each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew language to help us understand what those letters mean, to understand the whole thought process, to tell us what to focus on, how to do these things. So, yeah, he's celebrating every aspect of the Torah. But, in fact, while it's all been amplified for us, you could bring it all back down to Shamar Torah, Ashana Torah. It is that simple. So he says, I have genuinely acted upon and engaged on behalf of the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, mitzvahs, and I have been vindicated. Now, we spent all of our show last week talking about the connection between mitzvah and tzedakah. Tzedakah means to be made right, to become upright, to be righteous, to be saved, to be found not guilty. And it is the mitzvot which lead to that condition, according to Doe's inspired rhetoric. So mitzvot leads to tzedakah. Making mitzvot the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, because they cause even flawed guys like Doe to be vindicated, made right with God, upright, righteous, saved. Now, that's a very powerful connection. And it validates the idea that if you're willing to observe Yahweh's testimony in a holistic way, from the right perspective, you can not only derive great meaning from each word, you can successfully derive the accurate meaning of each word. Mitzvot is what leads to tzedakah. And it is the mitzvot leading to tzedakah that means that everything in Pauline Christianity is a pile of rubbish. If Yahweh's Torah mitzvot lead to tzedakah as Yahweh has inspired Dode to write, then Paul was wrong. Christianity is wrong. You will never remain idle and will never leave me to tyrants who would mistreat, extort, or try to oppress me. Dode is in a unique situation here. I have spent some of my life in this unique situation, not to the extent of Dode, but enough to have empathy. And there aren't a lot of people that are in that situation. But if you take Dode's position, where no matter what the consequence, you are going to larionate, you're going to constantly throw back Yahweh's testimony against all who mislead. Anyone who comes into your presence who is misleading, no matter how powerful they may be, if you're going to throw Yahweh's words at them, then you're going to have foes. And the unique thing here is, and I think you can project it on those willing to do as Dode did, which is to constantly cite Yah's testimony as his defense, as his rebuttal, as his means to expose and condemn religious and political adversaries. Then while you're doing that, you will have Yahweh's protection. Yahweh does not engage much in human affairs, but he does enlighten his children, and he does protect his children when his children are engaged in his business. And I think the reason that he does that is he does like working through his children to communicate his testimony. I think he likes it a lot. I think that's why, Larry, you wrote at the beginning of this program that you love Teruah. Teruah is what you do. It's your passion. And, and Yahweh loves it. Yeah, when somebody loves the passion of sharing his words in a very controversial, very confrontational way. He likes that. And when someone is willing to do that, he is going to protect that individual because it is in everyone's interest to do it. It's even in the interest of the adversaries. But it's in everyone's interest. It's the whole concept of the 91st Psalm. If you're engaged in Yahweh's business, which is to expose and condemn religion and politics using his testimony, introducing who he is by name, telling people what he is like and what he wants and what he is offering, the path that he has provided to him, the covenant that he has conceived for our benefit. If you're involved in that, Yahweh's going to protect you, just as he did Dode.
So if you know the reason that it ended up on FB the way it did, I just, you know, the forum, there was, you know, it was the way it was done in the forum. The answer was always Yahweh's words. And you know, I just didn't think it was interactive enough, and I just thought, well, you know, we'll just do it this way.
Yeah.
But it's the same as the forum. That's
yeah,
all it is.
The difference, I think, though, is you get more people with adversarial positions, where in the forum, since the purpose of the forum was really primarily for fellowship, for a way for people to share a common interest and love of Yahweh, and it was for fellowship, not for aggravation. It was not for confrontation, but really to help people living around the world have a sense of community in Yahweh's family. So it was conceived for a different purpose.
Majority of people who come to the forum are already seeking. They're already looking
right.
for, you know, to come to know Yah. And so, yeah, we're there, one, like you said, fellowship, and two, to help the new, you know, people who are coming and give them
Correct.
The support they need.
Correct. So I think that both have merit, and there's an overlap, of course. The overlap is a fascination with Yahweh's testimony. And in the case of your Facebook site, Larry, it's you have many participants who love Yahweh's testimony and many visitors that hate
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there is, if you look at Yahweh's own style, his own style is consistent with both. He's not limited. I mean, we didn't attempt to create the forum to repudiate the purveyors of religious myth. You created your site to a large degree to repudiate the purveyors of religious myth.
Well, that's true.
Yahweh does
both.
Yahweh does both. They're both. Dode did both. Dode did both.
Somebody threw me in a group today called Absolutely No Holds Barred Bible Talk Group. And honestly, I mean, I stayed in there about 4 hours, and I thought it ought to be named Absolutely No Whores Barred Biblio. And left it, because it was just absolutely insane. There were people in there saying, the Catholics have nothing to do with paganism, you know, and stuff like this. And no matter what you put in front of them, they just kept spewing out this empty.
So the Trinity is not pagan. The basis of Jesus Christ on Dionysus
Sunday worship
is not pagan. Sunday worship is not pagan. Holy water is not pagan. The Pope, which was the father of the Roman Empire, with their pagan gods, is not pagan. Lent, which is based on Babylon, is not pagan, huh? The Lord, which is the name of the God in virtually every pagan religion, is not pagan. Biblios, Bible, which is the name of an Egyptian sun goddess, is not pagan. Church, which is named after Church, the daughter of Helios, is not pagan. Gospel, which is God's spelling.
Sonia threw up some pictures of the graces and the I think it was Lisa threw up a picture of the daughter of Helios, the sun god. Meet them. I threw them in there. Nothing phases these people. They have an aversion to Yahweh's words.
Yeah.
They can't even
Christmas
see
and Easter, of course, are not pagan. No. It's,
You can only beat your head against the wall so long.
Rome, of course, wasn't pagan. No,
right.
No, of course not. Wow. Okay, well, I
and
guess
one guy told
not.
Me the real church, get this, the church from Philadelphia, I don't know a church from Philadelphia being mentioned anywhere. And he said it was, it's been traced to the Baptists. I fell over. I
so the Baptist,
the real church
in 67 or 68 CE when Yosef was revealing that letter to Yahweh Kanan. You know, and I always thought that the Baptists were invented sometime in the, the 19th century?
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. It, I just was blown away. I just said, wow, you know.
Yeah, so
these people
how
don't
many
care.
Baptist
so the word church has never used.
You know, there's two things that Yahweh has to say about the Philadelphians. One is they love his word, and the other is they love his name.
They love his name. Hey, yeah, he was saying, gee, I said, you don't even use his name.
Right.
I told him.
Right.
How could you be a Philadelphian? Yeah, exactly.
You
still love
and
Jesus.
You're quoting Christianity as opposed to Yahweh's word. Yahweh's word is comprised of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, full stop. That's it.
Yeah, that's the end of it. Yeah.
That's enough, by the way. More than enough.
Oh, yeah.
So Job then goes on to say, and this is Areb Ebed, I accept your pledge to personally pay the price to meet the eternal needs of your servant on behalf of and according to all that is good, moral, and generous. Do not allow arrogant and haughty, insolent and presumptuous, self-willed, self-absorbed, and self-motivated tyrants to continue to torment me, fulfilling their desire to make me suffer. There's two aspects of this. The first aspect of this is that Dode came to realize that the means that Yahweh had used to mitzvot and have the mitzvot create Sadak is that he himself paid the price. So he understands exactly what God was going to do, what he promised to do. And he figured that out by reading the Torah. He didn't need eyewitness accounts. And he knew that what he was doing was good. Now, that's the first part of it. And that's profound. The second part of it is something that all of us endure. And that is that to share Yahweh's testimony, to just say, this is what God had to say, he said, don't be patriotic, don't be religious, walk to him, embrace his Torah, act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, answer his invitations to meet with him seven times a year. Celebrate his name. This is what God is saying. If when you say those things, the vast preponderance of people, Larry, how do they respond?
They don't even see it. They just have an aversion to even looking at it.
They're arrogant. They're haughty. They're presumptuous. They're self-absorbed. All of those things.
They run to their traditions. They run to their biblio. You can show them extant material, and they say, "Oh no, that's wrong because the word Lord is used over here in Acts." They'll tell you that. And I'm thinking, how stupid could you be?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's a placeholder in Acts, but second of all, it's Acts is simply Luke's, who was the personal valet of the prototypical Antichrist, the Torahless one, Paul. It's inspired, but not inspired by Yahweh.
That copy of what you've got in that contract isn't the original. Let's look at the original. And you were talking about buying, say a $500 million home or something.
Mm-hmm.
You might really look at that original as opposed to that copy.
I was trying to figure out who owned it.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that whatever investment was going to the rightful owner so they could pass legitimate title. The last thing I would want is to make a offer to someone who didn't really own access to that home. And, you know, that's the case of the Christian New Testament. They do not have proper title to what they're offering.
Yeah, even the papyrus that we have that's late or early second century, that type of thing. Yeah, you know, it was still in Marcion's hands, so they already toyed with it.
Oh, of course.
You know, that's why Yahweh said not to listen to hearsay.
Right.
And letters and little writings.
When Yahweh said, you know, I don't want you to add to my Torah, you can't have a Christian New Testament.
That's right.
And, you know, even when you get to Yahusha's words, he's not adding to the Torah. He's explaining the Torah. He's talking about the Torah. He's affirming the Torah. He's living the Torah. He's observing the Torah. Not adding to the Torah.
He said the Torah would come from his mouth, and if he hadn't made that was one of the prophecies. Otherwise, he couldn't have been Yahusha.
Yeah. It was sufficient for those to find Sadak, and he was a bad boy. So it is sufficient for us. So Jody is saying that, you know, if I'm going to engage in this, God, you know, this is a quid pro quo. If you're going to engage in promoting Yahweh's testimony, you are going to be disparaged and slandered and attacked, and Yahweh will provide protection. I can tell you that even before I knew Yahweh as I know him today, when I was asked to participate in the exposure and condemnation of Islam, and then the conveyance of that using talk radio, back in the time that talk radio was actually a viable medium, one of the deals that I made with Yahweh is that I'll do this, but I don't want to have to be prepared. I'll take the time to study, and I'll learn what I need to know. But I'm not going to prepare for any special interview. I'm not going to go and research the host and find out what their perspective is. And I'm not going to try to debate my way out of this. I will make myself available to do it, and I will take the time to write the book and to study it and be familiar with the Islamic scriptures. But I'm not going to individually prepare, and I don't want to have to use my own wits in an interview. And so long as we're doing this together, and it's fun and it's easy, I'll continue. The moment it isn't, I'm done. And I did years upon years, some 3,000 interviews, that it was...
Yeah, well, that's where I ran into you.
Yeah, all I had to do was show up. Just show up.
Yeah.
Never prepared to...
By the way, you started talking about how we'd all been had, how Christianity was a farce. And you started talking about church steeples being built to kiss the sun, the first and the last thing, and on and on. And I said, whoa, yeah, that's why I walked out of those buildings. There's something going on there. And then I got a hold of you.
That was, and then, you know, ultimately it became I had two interviews in a row, back-to-back on the same day, where the host would not allow a presentation of evidence and reason. And the host besmirched everything that I said with, I don't believe you. I know a Muslim and they're nice people. You're talking hatefully here, and you're the problem. And there is no intelligent response. There's nothing you can do under those circumstances. So at the end of the two interviews, I just said, okay, we're done. That's it. It's over. And he said, yeah, that's right. That's you. You've done it. I wanted to engage in this with you. You did what I asked. We've completed the mission. There's no reason, there's no benefit in doing any more. 3,000 interviews and the two books are enough. That's we've completed the mission. And so I said, okay, great.
We got down to political correctness, didn't we?
Right. Yeah, so great. Now what? You know, the now what turned out to be yada yada. So it was a nice change. But the reason I'm sharing this is that if you engage in business that Yahweh wants to engage in, he'll protect you. He'll work with you. That's just his style. All right. This is brought to us by the letter Ain. The next word is Ain. My eyes.
My eyes. Yeah.
Have decided.
As a human eyes.
They, right. Yeah. My eyes have decided, and they yearn. Kalah. Are determined. They are bent upon. They long for your salvation. Yahshua, and for the promised word of righteousness and vindication, of Sadak. So his eyes are focused on, care about, inclined to read about Yahweh's salvation in his promised word, in his Imra, as it describes how to become righteous, vindicated, and upright. Now, it doesn't get any better than that. Really straightforward. You want to know how to observe the Torah? If your eyes are yearning for what Yahweh has to say about salvation in his promised word regarding vindication and righteousness. That's it. If that's your perspective, if that's your goal, if that's your desire, that's what you're going to find. Dode found it. His eyes were focused on what God promised in his word regarding salvation through Tzedakah, vindication. If we do the same, we'll find the same. So this is a declaration of the purpose of aim, using our eyes to prioritize reading about salvation and Yahweh's promises relative to salvation in his word, and therefore achieving vindication. Now, there was a passage in Yirmiyah that I thought related to this. Let me just share it with you quickly, because I think it does speak to this. Now, pay attention. Look, behold, now and see. This is, of course, Hannah. The day is coming, prophetically declares Yahweh, when I will take a stand. I will establish and I will rise up through Dode, the very fellow whose words we're reading, an upright and righteous, a Tzedakah, an innocent and completely moral, vindicating and acquitting branch. And he shall reign as king, and he will prudently prosper by teaching that which is proper. And he shall act and actively engage in the means which will be used to achieve justice and resolve disputes, the mitzvah. And that which is required according to the standard, the tzedakah, to vindicate in the land. In his day, Yehudah will be saved, and Yisrael will live and dwell in confidence, expressing their trust and reliance. And thus, this is his name, which he shall be called. Yahweh is our vindication. Yahweh Tzedakah. Now, these were written many hundreds of years apart. They say the same thing. You want to find vindication? You want to find salvation? Read the Torah. All right, we have another appearance of Asha. This time the actor is Yahweh. Dode says, I want you to act and to engage on behalf of dealing with your associate in accordance with your chesed, your mercy, your steadfast love, because I have chosen to learn. I have elected to be influenced by. I have prospered by responding to your clearly communicated prescriptions. Those things that you have inscribed that cut us into this relationship. So here is another appearance of Asa. It does, the Hebrew word for do is here again. And the doer is Yahweh. Dode is saying, I want you to engage on behalf of me. I want you to deal with your associate in accordance with your mercy and your love. He found mercy and love throughout the Torah. Didn't find it hateful. Didn't find it oppressive. Didn't find it constraining. Because I have chosen. I wasn't ordered to obey. I have chosen to learn. The benefit of the Torah. The Torah exists for us to learn. I have chosen to be influenced by, to properly respond to, Lamad, the choke, that which is inscribed that cuts us into this relationship. 119, 124. It is an extraordinarily simple and yet magnificent proposition.
Yahweh here again, the doing is by Yahweh, not by us. It's astonishing how many people, they get Yahweh's name, okay, and I'm walking away from Christianity. I want to do the mitzvah, and yet I see posting after posting after posting, and they contain words like faith, do, obey, keep, command, and law. Right. These are all words that should never be spoken because none of them are very representative about of Yahweh's nature or what he said.
When Dodd explained that these are the four things to focus upon in the Torah, none of them is even remotely akin to obey. None of them is remotely akin to a law. And when Torah is introduced by Yahweh, he says it's predicated on the verb yara, which is the source from which teaching and guidance, direction and instruction flow. It really isn't complicated. There is no Hebrew word for obey, and Torah means to teach, to guide. There is no association with between the Hebrew word shamar and keep. Shamar means to observe in the sense of opening your eyes and focusing upon that which can be seen. It doesn't mean keep. And shama, which is the one that's translated obey, means to listen, means to hear what God has to say. And so the Christian construct of laws to be obeyed that cannot be obeyed and that cannot save, when people move to that Pauline perspective, their perspective is the antithesis of Yahweh. They're walking away from him. They're looking away from him. Ah, you're right, Larry. The moment they start with those terms, there's no way to reach them. They're looking the wrong direction. That's why I suppose that when you confront their lies with Yahweh's testimony, they reject it because they're looking in the other direction.
You know, you take a good father, and he's out there, and he's teaching his kids, and he's allowing them a lot of freedom. You know, he gives them wings, but he gives them roots, and he gives them the ability to think. He teaches.
Yeah.
You take a bad parent, and they're out there smacking their kid upside the head every other minute.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, parenting well, you're encouraging your children to think. You're providing them guidance and instruction and teaching that enables them to develop their minds and their thinking. My eldest son recently bought his first car as a married couple with his wife. And he got rid of a car that he really loved. I mean, he's an engineer, and the engineering car is the BMW 3. And so he sold a car that he dearly loved that represented him. He's a mechanical aeronautical engineer. And he bought a car that's just practical for where he lives now. It's a Subaru, not Forester, but the Subaru Outback, I think is what they call it. And it's very
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry to hear that. Go ahead.
So he bought a very practical machine, and I communicated with him. And he wrote back a letter to me based upon the things we were talking about. And he was insightful. He was articulate. And he communicated rationally and reasonably. And you read a letter like that, and it makes you feel good. You know, that you spent time with your son encouraging them to learn and to think and, you know, how to interact and how to make informed choices and how to communicate. And it resonates. And so, that's the approach that Yahweh has. Teach. And if you teach, then you're empowering someone to make good choices. You're empowering them to be a more effective communicator. You're making them a lot more fun, a lot more rewarding to be around. You know, it's self-serving for Yahweh to teach us. It makes us more interesting, more fun. I am your servant, he says. I'm your associate. I'm your coworker. Absolutely was that. He engaged in Yahweh's business. Please teach me to think clearly and rationally because I really want to know and understand your restoring testimony and enduring witness. Well, if you want to make a request of God, that Yahweh is absolutely certain to respond to favorably. Ask him to do something that he's predisposed to do. What do you think the odds are that Dode got a favorable response from Yahweh on, I am your coworker, I'm engaged with you, I'm your associate. Please hear me clearly.
He got a standing ovation right there.
Yeah, to think clearly and rationally, because I really want to understand your restoring testimony and enduring witness. I'm going to tell you that I think that the likelihood that God, based upon reading this and reading, knowing who Yahweh is, the likelihood of God responding favorably was 100%. Not 99.99999. It's 100%. You know, it doesn't, just because that's what Yahweh wants, still it's not such a bad thing to ask. You know, our children, and you know, we as parents know what our children want, but if our children take the time to say, you know, Dad, Mom, I would really like such and such, and when they're asking for something that you want to give them, it's a lovely experience. Here Dode was asking Yahweh for something not only that Yahweh wanted to provide, but something that was mutually beneficial. And Dode didn't just send on like a bump on a log and say, okay, I want you to do the information dump. You know, I don't want to have to take the time to read all this stuff and make all the connections. No. I want you to help me think. He wasn't saying, I want you to do an information dump. I want you to help me think rationally. Because as I study your word, I want to be able to make the right connections. I want to go from knowing what you said to understanding what you said. Because I really, as he says it right here, because I really want to understand your Edah, restoring testimony and enduring witness. That was Yahweh's ultimate gift to Dode. And that is Dode's gift to us. The reason we studied this psalm. He came, he got exactly what he asked for. But he didn't keep it to himself, he shared it with us. Then he says, it's time to act and engage, to approach, and on behalf of Yahweh. They broke and totally violated your Torah. So you've got a choice here, folks. You can come to think rationally, to know and understand Yahweh's restoring testimony and enduring witness, and then come to recognize that it's time to act. It's time to engage, to approach Yahweh. Or you can be among those who disassociate themselves from the Torah. Those are your choices. If you want to act and engage and approach Yahweh, the only way to do so is through the Torah. The Torah is the lone source of access to Yahweh. Can't approach him any other way. That's where he's introduced. That's where he is defined. That's where his will is explained. That's where the terms and conditions of the covenant are delineated. That's where the path to him is provided. That's where the teaching and guidance exists. It's found in no place else. If you want to approach Yahweh, the only way to do so is to be in accord with the Torah. That's it. That's what Dode came to realize. That's why Yahweh loved this man so much. And he realized to do that, you got to act. And here he was, this whole wonderful long song about how to come to know Yahweh, how to come to understand what he's offering. And he says, you know, once I got that part, once you gave me the knowledge and the understanding by reading your Torah, now it's time to act. And if you're going to engage your relationship with Yahweh, you're going to be saved by him, you're going to participate in the covenant, you got to act. You have to engage. No bumps on a log, you know. Sure. Yahweh reached out to Dode before Dode knew him. Yahweh reached out to Moshe before Moshe knew him. He reached out to Abraham before Abraham knew him. He reached out to all of us before we knew it. But we responded. It's time to act. It's time to respond. You need to engage if you're going to approach Yahweh. No one is escorted into his presence. We walk to him. We walk to him through his Torah. It provides the guidance. And so, my friends, that brings us to, therefore, God, I genuinely and totally love the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement, your mitzvah, more than gold nuggets, more than gold coins. And that's what he realized, is that if you walk to God, if you act upon what he has offered, then you're not just going to accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah. You'll fall in love with them. I love them. I love them all. You know, in fact, the reason we began this program by besmirching religion and politics is that it's a benefit to walk away from these things. It's, you know, the very things that God asks us to do to participate in the covenant, well, there's not just the five benefits of once we do those things that we receive from God. All five of those things are a benefit. And there's very few things more beneficial than walking away from religion and politics. It changes your whole outlook on life. All of a sudden,
it was a little confusing for me to say, be a chair for Alan Keyes as an example,
right?
Or be a conservative on the Republican Executive Committee here in Jacksonville, Florida. It was a little confusing because no matter what I did, nothing changed.
Yeah. And all the politicians and candidates would say they would all preach change, and yet nothing changed.
Yeah, well, the only thing that changed was more of the bad stuff that they said they were going to get rid of, like regulation, taxation, and so forth. And so, you know, as I sat there, I thought, how in the world can I really, with good conscience, defend people that are growing government?
Right.
And I couldn't do it. I don't have to do it now. I'm free of that. I mean, you start on a Torah, you know, making you free. Yeah. I'm free of trying to defend idiots. I don't have to.
Right. Or vote for idiots or promote idiots or make contributions
to
idiots or devote
things.
Your time to to idiots. And
wasting my time. Yep.
Wasting your time. And really, if you go back to the most telling election was when you had John McClown. The Obaminator.
One of them.
The Obaminator. Why don't you tell me who's the lesser of those two evils?
Well, I can't.
It's a little hard to decide.
Yeah.
Well, you tell me if you were serious. I mean, if you want to get into that. If you were at all serious and you had Bill Clinton running against you, why would you throw up Bob Dole unless you plan to lose? You know, that's like bringing out the Chicago Cubs and betting that they're going to win the World Series this year.
Against the Yankees
insane.
Of the 1980s. Yeah.
Yeah,
Bill Clinton Bill Clinton could walk into a room, and even his political foes would be eating out of his hand. They loved him. He was a perfect politician. That makes him a bad person. But he was a perfect chameleon politician, craving acceptance and achieving acceptance. And you put him against a guy that had the charisma and the political skill of
a rock.
Yeah, a rock. Yeah. Yeah, you tell me. How does that work?
Well, it was the last time I ever voted. I'll tell you that. And that was the end of it, right there.
Yeah.
I
remember the election.
I'll tell you how loyal I am. Mm-hmm. You know, and 1 year... The Cubs got rid of Ralphio Palmeiro.
Yes.
They got rid of Vance Law. And they got rid of Andre Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them. The only three guys that could hit. They only had one guy left on the team that could hit. They got rid of them all. Ralphio Palmeiro went out and became the American Baseball Player of the Year, American League.
Yeah.
Awesome Dawson ended up going into the Hall of Fame as an Astro to get the Cubs back, and he would have. He just wanted to play on grass because he had bad knees.
Right.
You know, on and on it went. I said, well, these guys don't want to win. I've never watched a Cubs game since.
Right.
You know, there comes a point in time when people have to realize you can't run to the political actors. They can't find freedom with both hands.
Right. When the election was Obama and McCain, I recall that election night saying, oh, my God, we are absolutely screwed no matter who wins. We're absolutely
screwed. Well, you had a guy that went out there to lose. You can't bring up the fact he's a liar. You can't bring up the fact he's gone to this church and their whole concept is based on communism and racism. No, we won't talk about those. So the very things that make this person up, you can't talk about them because you're supposed to buy into the PR. I mean, it's such nonsense. I mean, there comes a point in time when people really are put there to fail. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened with McLame, who is just a monster, by the way. He's a monster.
He's a monster. But would he have been worse than Obama? Perhaps.
He'd have been every bit as bad. He's just a monster.
He'd have been bad in a different way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, he's as disingenuous on Islam as the Abominator. He's even more warlike than the Abominator. So,
how about Romney, the smiling twerp?
A lot more force with McCain than we are with Obama.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, you look at Romney. Now, here you had an election, just showing how stupid people are. The election, the number one issue motivating some 75% of voters was the economy at the time. And you had a guy who had built businesses, who had run businesses, who had salvaged businesses, who had engaged in business his entire life, extraordinarily successfully, who had managed large organizations even. And you have him pitted against a guy that had never even worked in a jack-in-the-box. And
yet all Romney had to do in the last debate was bring up Benghazi and say, we've caught you lying, and he didn't do it.
Right.
I was shocked. I was shocked.
Yeah, or just be disrespectful of the office of the president and say, you know, by the way, pal, you've never worked for a business in your entire life. You have no idea what it's like to make payroll. You've never made an investment in a business. You've never managed anything. You've never been an executive prior to being elected president of the United States. You are the most unqualified boob that's ever held this job, and your first speech was to lie on behalf of the very religion that is responsible for 99.9% of the terrorism in the world. I mean, the very fact that you won that first election over McLame, as you call him, is just a testament to how stupid the American people are. And you know, if they're going to vote for you again, then there's no salvation for America. Then America really is that stupid. Why not lay it out there and let people confront it?
Sure.
Yes, yes, I did say that 53% of Americans, or 47%, or whatever number that he used, I think it was 47%, of Americans will never vote for an economic conservative because they're on the dole, because they're net beneficiaries of wealth redistribution, because they're receiving some form of government subsidy. And so that 47%
they have everything to lose and nothing to gain.
Right. Are voting to rob people for their own pleasure. And that's the truth. And if you don't like it, then change it. But the fact is, that's the way America is right now. 47% of this country is a parasite. And they ought not even vote. Because all they're doing is it's the tyranny of the majority against the minority. It's those who are unproductive claiming the benefits of those who are productive. You know, and it's, why didn't he say it? Because Americans chafe at the truth. We rally around the lie.
We love the lie.
The nature of humankind. We love the lie.
Well, if we're to believe Yahweh's words right up to the end, America is going to rally around that flag in war.
Right to the end.
practice.
Yeah, we're going to continue to our gunboat diplomacy, that we're going to continue to be arrogant, to be drugged, to be hostile, to invade other countries, to tread people down, to try to establish the rules of the road for the world.
And to
the
drive others along.
Yeah, the Abominator's speech in front of the United Nations is his confession that Yahweh was right in Yahshua Isaiah 18 when he scolded America. America engaging in bombing Syria is an absolute exquisite affirmation that Yahweh's association between America and the war in Syria was accurate. I mean, we didn't need confirmation that God's prophecies are true. But it's still reassuring every time that man does exactly what God said he was going to do. Even when man does things that are that heinous and that stupid, that suicidal. And it's
almost boggles the mind that people don't understand. You're seeing the formation of a one-world government.
Correct.
In this very time that Yahweh said would be a one-world government that would put an end to this age,
right,
and bring in 7 years of tribulation, and there's still people who don't understand
it.
Well, it was all written out there. It's laid out there. You're watching it before your very eyes. Do you think somebody just got lucky?
Yeah.
I mean,
so everything
stupid
that Yahweh said in his Torah and his prophets and Psalms has either happened exactly as he said or is materializing before our very eyes at this moment. But you can't trust him, which is the essence of Pauline Christianity. I don't think
that is the position, isn't it?
Yeah, that position does not resonate with me. You know, I took the time to explain my position vis-a-vis the Torah in accord with Doe's observations on the Torah. I shared that with you. Because it resonates. It seems rational. The evidence and reason lead to those conclusions. But, you know, I can't understand the Christian position. It's irrational. It's uninformed. It's secret.
Well,
it's
predicated on a lot of magic. You know, there's a lot of minutia you got to get. You got to get rid of the worldwide flood. You got to get rid of the Earth's 6,000 years old story. You got to get rid of Adam was the first man. None of these things did Yahweh say. You know, the six days to create the universe, but he was talking 15 billion years, our time, due to general relativity, which he points out. And so, you know, and the biggest one, the huge one, is he's omnipresent. Until they understand that this isn't magic, you know,
and
I was not omnipresent.
Him to be a participant in the football game. It's the reason that the missionary was cured of Ebola. It wasn't the drugs. It wasn't that they were one of the lucky 30% that recovered. And their God did nothing to protect them from Ebola, but then even though it was the drugs that cured them from Ebola, they thanked God for curing them.
It's a wild ride out there, you know.
It is. The omnipresent
being
God.
Sound in mind is not a part of a religious, you know.
Right. The omnipresent God that's involved in everybody's life and manipulating everything. It was God's will. The athlete that says, I don't know why we lost that game or I got injured, but I know it was God's plan. God has a plan for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does have a plan.
Well, we should reveal it to me and then we could know what you're worth, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Paul, though. I mean, we look at Mr. Paulos, he who is lowly and little, talking about, follow me, I'm going to be your father. You know, Yahusha didn't even say that. He didn't even say that. But Paul says it. And so, obviously, Yahusha needed Paul's help. God needed Paul's help, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is some bizarre thinking. Hell, Paul, if we'd have known you were out there, we wouldn't have went down and debased ourselves, right?
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of debasing myself, I compromised my health by getting overweight and not exercising enough. So I decided that I needed to eat better and to exercise more. And, you know, at no time in my exercise and in my diet have I asked God to help me with my exercise and diet. It's my responsibility. It's not God's business. not his business. It's my responsibility to eat right and to exercise. When it comes to doing a program for, like this, I'll ask, you've got to help me share his testimony accurately in a way that resonates with people. That's important. I can say emphatically that God has a plan for my life. It happens to be the same plan that he has for your life, James, for your wife's life, Patty, for Larry, for your life. It's for us to participate in the covenant. He has exactly the same plan for all of us. But he has a plan for my life. He has a plan for your life. And when we're focused on that plan, he's engaged in our lives. When we're not, you know, it's just part of free will. We get to do the things. We get to make bad choices and good choices. Dode made a lot of bad choices. He made a lot of good choices. And so when somebody says that God has a plan for my life, I agree. But you know what the plan is.
So it's the same plan for everybody. Have a relationship with him.
Right.
All you got to do is meet at the places he says to meet him. That's it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, it's got a plan. Got a plan, got a path. And Scott today was listening to Shattering Myths at the end of the program. We were talking about how you know, God is not going to change, that God is resolute in his testimony. And there's a reason that God does not compromise. And Scott was talking about that, and he says, now the reason that God doesn't compromise, where man does compromise, is that his plan is already perfect. He's got a perfect plan. He's done everything that was required. The plan is completely dependable, totally reliable, wholly trustworthy. So why would you compromise? Why would you chip something off of that? Why would you try to buff that, which is perfect? Why would you take away from or add to or mingle with something else if you've got a perfect, dependable, reliable, fully effective solution? That's why God can't compromise. There's no purpose in compromising. If he were to compromise, he is diminishing what he's offering, because what he's offering already is perfect. You're invited to meet with him. You're invited to participate in a covenant relationship. You're invited to observe the Torah. You're invited to get to know him. Engage in a relationship with him. Plan is straightforward. He's not going to compromise on it. He can't compromise on it without becoming dishonest and unreliable and without diminishing the beauty of the plan. Straightforward, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, he's not running for U.S. Senate here. You know, I think Bob Dole once said that the art of politics is the ability to compromise.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. And
that's
what it is.
Why God is not political.
And yeah, he's pretty uncompromising. And yet,
you know
he's as gentle as a lamb.
Big W said to King George II, he says, the essence of good judgment is positive thinking. The essence of good judgment is having a positive outlook.
You know, there was a guy years ago, you know.
He'll make good judgments.
You'd walk into the...
He's a great person to look at for a good judgment.
You'd walk into the worst companies in the world. I mean, the worst. These guys would be swimming around, their workers, up to a cesspool and up to their eyeballs in the worst type of work. Earning next to nothing, and they'd all be listening to Zig Ziglar tapes. That's what I remember. Are you kidding me?
The art of positive thinking. Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Good
Zig. And they could all quote Zig. It was really funny. None of them made a living, and they were all broke, and they were doing the worst commission work in the world, and they were running around talking about Zig. And they'd have meetings in the morning, and this guy would come out with his Zig tapes, you know. And I used to think, if you think what you're doing is positive, you're ignorant. You're stupid, you know. And, of course, you know, they didn't want to look at their reality. They wanted to sort of positively think themselves into a different position. but it wasn't going to happen.
Nope.
That makes sense to you?
We aren't responsible for the positive outcome. Yah was responsible for the positive outcome, and if we wish to have the positive outcome, there's a very straightforward path to it through the Torah. Answer his invitations to me, respond to the conditions of the covenant, and he will deliver the positive outcome. And the positive outcome, you know, it's not like Islam where, you have to check out of this life before you get your promised reward. It's immediate.
Yeah.
I mean, the reward is immediate. The moment you engage in the covenant relationship with Yahweh, the benefits start immediately. Why we're so...
one of the big benefits, everything starts making sense.
Yeah, I know. I like that one. That's why I like group here as part of the 119th Psalm, is when you have the same perspective that Yahweh has. Because it's really, I mean, if you realize that he's the author of life, the creator of the universe, and the author of this Torah, therefore, if his foundational treatise to humankind is his Torah guidance, how can you go wrong by establishing your perspective from the perspective of the Torah? If you look at things as God presents them, then your perspective is in sync with the very guy that created the universe that we're trying to examine and understand. It makes perfect sense to me to begin your whole process by syncing your perspective, your aim, so that you're standing on the center of his Torah, and you're looking at everything through the perspective of the Torah. When you do that, it all makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it does. It doesn't make sense that God came down and smeared his blood on a pagan cross so anybody who believed that would live.
Yeah, God died.
Okay.
Man was able to kill God.
Yeah, that was the end of God.
And it was those dastardly Jews, not the Romans, that killed him.
Yeah, on top of it all.
And that the answer is to be physically, bodily resurrected. And the proof of that is no one recognized him. And we're going to celebrate that on the pagan high holidays of Easter.
Yeah.
As part of the Trinity.
And you're falling out.
In a pagan
to be ignorant.
It's one thing
to be ignorant. It's another thing to have people on a silver platter serve you Yahweh's words and explain the plan of the Moed Mikra.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was just laughing there at how stupid Christianity is. And while that is callous, we finally get to the point where you recognize just how stupid you have to be a Pauline Christian. To believe that there was a New Testament and that Paul authored half of it. It's really tough not to to laugh. I mean, it's so obvious that it's not true. I find that I'm ready to laugh at them.
It's like I say, it's one thing to be ignorant, but, you know, when you've spent years putting together statements like, hey, here's the wolf in sheep's clothing, and it turns out that the wolf tears and rips,
right.
And then over here in Romans, Paul's saying,
yeah,
I'm a Benjamin. And, you know,
Paul talks about
wolf.
His rapture using Harpazo, a vicious snatching away.
You throw all these things at them.
Right.
And you have Yahusha saying, look, guys, if anybody comes to you saying, I've been with them in the wilderness or the desert, don't believe them because they could even fool you, you know. And then there's only one guy that fits that bill, and you show him that. And he said, by the way, when I come back, everybody's going to see me.
Right.
You know, and he was having
some. There's only one person named Yahul that came around during the time that the Moed were being fulfilled. That claimed authority over Gentiles, that was fixated on the male genitalia, that was opposed to circumcision, that used circularizing, who was named Shaul. And so, who's the plague of death? You figure it out.
Yeah, you show it to them, and they you're misstating. I had one guy tell me I was misquoting him on the fact that he was saying he had sinned because he hadn't charged enough money to speak words to somebody. And then down later, just, you know, he says, you know, I had to rob other churches to pay you.
Right.
You know, and I was misquoting him. Misquoting him. Yeah. He said it.
Well, Paul says, I pretend to be whatever. I pretend to be Torah observant, although I'm really not, to gain a advantage over the Torah observant. I pretend to be a Jew to those who are Jewish. I pretend to be a Gentile to those who are Gentile, all to gain an advantage. At that point, if you're a rational individual, if you're a moral individual, you're going to say, you know, that's the last person on earth I'm going to trust.
Well, as soon as you find out that the grace is gratia, and the gospel of grace is based on pagan names, and these are the things he literally wrote,
right?
You know, I think that's why you probably used to have that on the front page of Questioning Paul.
Yeah, but why not, right there, told it all. Yeah. Or why not just when Paul says that that there is a second covenant, that the covenant that was proclaimed in the Torah was with Hagar and its slaves. So when he wrote that, which is the opposite of what's true, why would anyone believe him? If you have to lie to make a point, do you have a valid point?
No, you don't. And tell me, when was the last time Yahweh said, go out and lie to people to get them to come to me?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, what prophet ever did that? None. No, they all spoke the truth. Most of them were killed, by the way.
Right.
You know, for speaking the truth. They had nothing in this world to gain. They had everything to lose. And they stood up and they spoke the truth anyway.
And by the way, getting killed at professing Yahweh's testimony once, you know, and all of them were killed after they had fully communicated everything Yahweh had to say, the ones that were killed. That's a benefit. I'm ready to check out.
Yeah. Well, none of them were, you know, they're all living it up right now, so I'm not worried about them. I'm just saying, when was the last time that Yahweh said, hey, go out there and lie and trick people to get them to come to me?
Right. And imagine
like
the honor.
To me.
Imagine the honor. I mean, it's a thrill and an honor for us to know Yahweh, to be invited into his family, to have him enlighten us with his testimony and to be able to share it. That's an honor. It really is. It's a thrill. It's an honor. But can you imagine the honor of God coming to you and said, I want you to be my prophet. I'm going to speak directly to you. I want you to write down what I said. You are going to serve as my prophet. That would be pretty cool.
That'd be awesome. It'd be totally awesome.
Yeah,
and of course, at that point, you wouldn't care what anybody had to say. Right. And I just think people need to get it together a little bit and use their head. This isn't magic. This is the creator of the universe inviting you to come and visit and be a part of his family. And you can either accept that offer, or you can do what most people do, not listen to the offer, or you can do what other people do, which is twist the offer. I choose to listen to the offer and walk towards Yahweh and become perfect.
Accepted. Listen to the offer, observe what he had to say, and accept it. I didn't choose to negotiate with him. Say, you know, that second point of the covenant, I'm not so sure I like that one. What if we changed it? No. Learn what he said. Accept what he said. It's his family. If you don't like what he had to say, then don't be part of his family. It's okay.
Go out and create your own universe.
Go out and create your own universe. There you go.
No problem.
It should be easy for some of these buffoons, the way they talk. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to go make some dinner here. And I'm going to call it an evening, but I've enjoyed being with you.
All right. Well, I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed my ribeyes. For Tarula, too.
Really yeah.
It was
all right, guys. Good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.